Chapter 24. Istvan 5. Traitors. In midnight clad. Istvan, an unremarkable sun, far from Terra, precious throne world of the Imperium. The system's third world, comfortably close enough to the sun to support human life, was a virus-soaked mass grave, marking the anger of Horus Lupercal. The world's population was nothing more than contaminated ash scattered over lifeless continents, while the bones of their cities remained as blackened smears of burnt stone. A civilization reduced to memory in a single day. The orbital bombardment from the Warmaster's fleet, payloads of incendiary shells and virus-laden biological warfare pods, had seemingly spared nothing and no one anywhere in the world. Istvan III lingered now in silent orbit around its sun, almost grand in the extent of its absolute devastation, serving as the scarred tombstone for the death of an empire. The system's fifth planet was a colder globe, able to support only the most resistant and genetically valiant life. Its skies were thick with storms, its skin was scabbed by tundra, and nothing on the face of the world promised an easy life for any that would settle upon it. Ringing Istvan V was one of the largest fleets ever gathered in the history of the human species. Without a doubt, it was the most impressive coalition of Astartes vessels, with the scouts, cruisers, destroyers, and command ships of seven entire legions. The matte-black hulls of the Raven Guard's vessels blended into the void around their flagship, the sleek, vast, and vicious shadow of the Emperor. In a tighter formation, the green armor-plated warships of the Salamanders clustered in orbit around their Primarch's vessel, the immense Flame-Wrought, its edges and battlements bedecked in leering draconic gargoyles of burnished bronze. A much smaller fleet hovered in the high atmosphere, comprised almost entirely of smaller escorts around the hulking capital ship Therum, marked the presence of the Iron Hands. The vessels were denser, their armor thicker, and their black hulls were trimmed with gunmetal grey and polished silver. The Iron Hands had sent their elite companies, while the bulk of the Legion's fleet remained en route. Of the enemy fleet, there was no sign at all. The vessels of the Death Guard, the Emperor's Children, the World Eaters, and the arch-traitorous Sons of Horus were gone, hidden from Imperial eyes and the Emperor's vengeance. In preternatural concordance, hundreds of vessels drifted closer to the world from the system's farthest reaches. Clad in armor of midnight blue, the warships at the vanguard bore the skullish insignia and bronze statuary of the Night Lord's Legion. The Iron Warriors drifted alongside their brothers, bastion ships of composite metals and dull iron ceramite barely reflecting the stars. The vessels of the Alpha Legion formed the peripheries of the massed fleet, their sea-coloured hulls painted with stylized scales in honour of the reptilian beast they'd taken as their symbol. Embossed hydras snarled into space from their places along the ship's hulls. At the core of the approaching armada, with more warships than any of their brother legions, came the stone-grey battle fleet of the Word-Bearers. The 17th Legion flagship, Fidelitas Lex, carved its way closer to the world ahead, massive engines vibrating with the gentle power of an approach vector's thrust. So many vessels breaking from the warp at once should have been a maelstrom of colliding hulls and spinning junk, yet the armada coasted closer to Istvan V with maddening calm, safe distances maintained between every craft and the void shields of each ship never once coming into crackling contact. With a precision that required mass calculation, the fleets of seven Astartes legions hung in the skies above Istvan V. Shuttles and gunships ferried between the heaviest cruisers, while the decks of every warship made ready to deploy their warriors in an unprecedented, unified planetfall. Horus, traitorous son of the Emperor, was making his stand on the surface. The Imperium of Man had sent seven legions to kill its wayward scion, little knowing four of them had already spat on their oaths of allegiance to the throne world. The cellar was crowded with remembrances and off-duty army grunts barred from the operations decks. Ishak shouldered his way through to the bar, earning a score of annoyed grunts and tutted threats that he knew wouldn't ever go anywhere near an actual confrontation. He ordered a plastic beaker, no expenses spared here in the cellar, of whatever engine grease had been recently brewed without being immediately fatal. In payment, he scattered a few coppers on the bar's stained wooden surface. In their absence, his pockets were distinctly empty. Around him, the conversations were all keyed to the same subject. The planetfall. The betrayal. Horus. 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 What he found most interesting was the tone such discussion was taking. The Emperor abandoned the Great Crusade. Horus was betrayed by his father. The rebellion is justified. It went on and on, just as it had been doing for over a month now, during the entire time the fleet had been in the warp. Ishak tapped one of the nearest drinkers on the shoulder. The man turned, showing a face with an interesting geography of scars. He wore Yukar fatigues and a holstered sidearm.
Yes.
So tell me why you think this is all justified, Ishak said. Because it just sounds like treason to me.
The Yukar trooper sneered and turned back to his friends. Ishak tapped him on the shoulder again.
No, really. I'm interested in your perspective. Piss off, boy. Just answer the question, Ishak smiled.
The Yukar gave a grin that would have been more threatening if he didn't have flakes of his last meal caught between his teeth.
The War Master conquered half the galaxy, didn't he? The Emperor's been hiding back on Terra for half a century.
Typical soldier logic, Ishak thought. While one man dealt with the incomparable scale of managing an entire interstellar empire, he was infinitely less respected than the man who waged war in the most simple, aggressive terms, and always from positions of tactical, numerical, and material supremacy.
Let me get this straight. Ishak feigned a thoughtful expression. You admire the man who has armies large enough never to lose a single war, but loathe the man responsible for the vision and effort of actually maintaining the Imperium.
The Yukar scoffed at Ishak's description and turned his back on the Remembrancer. For just a moment, the Imagist wondered if he was missing some key point in all this. The Word-bearers were here under Imperial orders, summoned to help put down Horus's rebellion. Yet here, the human staff and crews of the expeditionary fleet were practically united in favour of Horus's actions. He sipped the drink and immediately regretted it.
Delicious, he said to the girl behind the bar.
The talk rattled on around him. Ishak let it filter in, as he did most nights, listening without speaking, eavesdropping without being brazen about it. He was a passive seeker of public opinion, easier to avoid fights that way. The cellar had become a little more fisticuffy since the soldiers had started drinking here too.
The Word-bearers won't attack Horus, one voice said with solemn surety. It's not a war. They're here to negotiate.
It'd be a war if the negotiations fail.
The Emperor is a relic of the Unification Wars. The Imperium needs more from its leaders now.
Horus hasn't even committed any crime. The Emperor is overreacting out of fear.
It won't come to battle. Lorca will see to that.
The Emperor won't even leave Terra to deal with this.
Does he even care about the Imperium? I heard Horus will lead the other Primarchs to Terra.
Ishak left his drink unfinished as he headed back to his personal chamber on the communal civilian deck. He wanted to believe he had only so much stomach for bad beverages and seditionist ideology, but the truth was far more prosaic. He didn't have much money left. Halfway to his room, he decided to change his course. Sitting bored in his chamber yet again wouldn't achieve anything, and even without the coin to get pleasantly drunk, he could do what he'd done back in those first nights after joining the Legion's fleet. It was a duty that had, for better or worse, lapsed in recent weeks. His endless attempts to arrange a meeting with one of the Gal Vorbach were rebuffed each and every time. The Crimson Warrior's seclusion was ironclad, and it was rumoured even the custodians were barred from accessing their meditation chambers. The continuous refusals and lack of battle had dulled the Remembrancer's ambitious interest somewhat, but with nothing else to do, it was time to get back in the game. Ishak checked his Pictor's battery cell and went off in search of something that would make him famous. The Primarch was waiting for them. As they disembarked from the rising sun and onto the main hangar platform of Fidelitas Lex, Lorgar stood in full warplate, the massive Crozius Maul Illuminarum in his grey fists. At his side,
Erebus and Corpheron wore their own granite dark armour, the surfaces of each armour plate etched with invocations from the word. Behind them, the entire First Company formed an imposing welcome in their overbearing suits of Terminator war gear, bearing double-barreled bolters and long blades in brutish fists. Lorgar's benevolent countenance broke into a warm smile as the 37 Crimson Warriors walked onto the hangar deck. As one, they went to their knees before their liege lord. Lorgar gestured for them to rise.
Ah, your memory is so short. My Gal Vorbach need never kneel before me.
Argel Tal was the first back to his feet, noting the distaste upon Corpheron's aged features. He growled, baring his teeth at the first captain as his gauntlet claws extended. Lorgar chuckled at the display.
My prayers are answered, the Primarch continued, for you have arrived.
As ordered, said Argel Tal and Zaphon in the same moment.
The Gal Vorbach had little cohesion in their ranks. There was no pretense of standing at attention or gathering in orderly rows. They stood together, but alone, each one remaining among their brothers, yet guarding their personal space with narrowed eyes behind crystal-blue helm lenses.
We make planet fall within the hour, Lorgar said. Argel Tal, Zaphon, for now I would have you come with us. You will rejoin your brothers before we commence the assault.
Very well, said Argel Tal.
The custodes? Lorgar asked. Tell me, they still live.
They still live. We have them scattered on four separate vessels, assigned with overseeing the defence if the vessels are boarded in the coming battle.
They know there will be a battle? Lorgar rounded on Argel Tal.
They are not fools, nor are they inured to news as it spreads from ship to ship. They are placed on four vessels that are delayed in the warp. Their navigators and captains have been appraised of the situation's delicacy, sire. The custodes will not arrive until the Battle of Istvan is won.
Zaphon broke in.
They were spared, as you ordered.
He ignored Argeltar's glare, feeling it despite the fact his brother still wore his helm.
It was not my order, at least not in recent years.
The Primarch gestured to Erebus, who inclined his head in turn.
The first chaplain has demanded they remain alive all this time. He weaves the plans that require them alive.
Argel Tal said nothing, though he openly radiated annoyance. Zaphon was less restrained.
Erebus, he asked, smiling behind his faceplate. I have paid heed to every addendum and subscript in the Book of Lorgar, brother. I've used many of your new rituals myself. I would be keen to learn more of this one.
In time, perhaps. Zaphon thanked the other chaplain as the group moved on. Erebus remained closest to the Primarch as they walked away, his stoic, tattooed features as stern and dignified as ever. Corpheron stalked in their wake, the heavy gear joints of his Terminator armour grinding with each step. Zaphon kept his actions the very mirror of Erebus's, but Argel Tal glanced at the first captain with a smile.
What amuses you, brother?
The ageing half-Astartes asked.
You do, old one. You reek of fear. I pity you. That they never bred any human terror out of your bones. You think I feel fear?
The scarred face twisted into something even sourer.
I have seen more than you know, Argel Tal. We have not been idle in the True Legion, while you danced at the galaxy's edge, playing nursemaid to the custodes.
Argel Tal merely chuckled, the laugh leaving his helm in a low growl of crackling box. The Fidelitas Lex played host to a gathering of rare significance. Upon entering the war room, Argel Tal couldn't hold back an exhalation of awe. He'd been expecting a gathering of word-bearer captains, chaplains, and chapter masters. He'd not anticipated the presence of commanders from the Night Lords, Alpha Legion, and Iron Warriors, let alone the three figures that stood around the central hololithic table. The crowds parted, allowing Lorgar to proceed to the centre, where he stood alongside his brothers. None of the three welcomed him, just as none of them seemed overly respectful to each other either. Argel Tal grunted acknowledgement of the two captains closest to him as he took his place at the front of the gathered Astartes. Their heraldry offered their identities in flowing Nostraman script. The first, a tall, austere warrior with bronze-plated skulls hanging from his pauldrons on iron chains, bore the numerals of 10th Company and the name-etching
Malkarion. The second needed no declarations of identity, for everyone knew him as soon as their eyes rested upon him. His armour was wreathed in stretched leathery patches of flayed flesh, and his helm's faceplate was a skullish glare of bleached bone. His was a name spread across the Imperium almost as notable as that of Abaddon, of the Sons of Horus, Eidolon of the Emperor's Children, Raldoron of the Blood Angels, or even the Primarchs themselves. Argeltar inclined his head in respect to Sevatar, first captain of the Night Lord's Legion. The warrior nodded in return.
"You are late."
His voice issued forth as a grinding snarl. Argeltar didn't rise to the Night Lord's bait.
"How perceptive of you," he replied. "You can read a chronometer."
A guttural grunt of amusement issued from Sevatar's skull-painted helm. In the centre of the gathered leaders and lords, Lorgar raised his hands for silence. The baiting, grumbling, and occasional laughter between the Astartes died down.
"Time is short," said the Golden Primarch, "and events are already in motion. Those of us in this room are under no illusions as to what we face. 8 legions, of which we are 4, and countless worlds are rising in rebellion against the Imperium. If we are to march on Terra and take the throne, we must annihilate those legions remaining loyal to the Emperor, and we must do so alone. No matter how loyal our army regiments are, they will be devastated if they are committed to the surface of Istvan. So, we wage war without them. Astartes against Astartes, brother against brother. There is a poetry to that I am sure you will all appreciate."
No one said a word.
Lorgar continued, "You have all walked different paths, but together we come to the same destination. The Emperor has failed us. The Imperium has failed us all."
Here, Lorgar nodded to the largest gathering of Night Lords in their lightning-streaked warplate.
"It has failed us by the laxity of its laws, by the decadence of its culture, and in the injustices heaped upon those of us who served most loyally."
He gestured to the bare metal ceramite of the Iron Warrior captains.
"It has failed us by never recognizing our virtues, never rewarding us for the blood we have shed in bringing about its ascendancy, and never providing unity when we needed it most."
The Alpha Legion stood impassive and silent in their scaled armor.
"It has failed us," Lorgar inclined his head to them, "by being flawed to its core, imperfect in its pursuit of a perfect culture, and in its weakness against the encroachment of Xenos breeds that seek to twist humanity to alien ends."
Finally, the Primarch turned to his own captains, their grey armour decorated with prayer scrolls.
"And it has failed us, most of all, by being founded upon lies. The Imperium is forged by a dangerous deceit, and erodes us all by demanding we sacrifice truth on the altar of necessity. This is an empire propagated by sin that deserves to die. And here on Istvan V we begin the purge. From these ashes shall rise the new kingdom of mankind, an Imperium of justice, faith, and enlightenment, an Imperium heralded, commanded, and protected by the avatars of the gods themselves. An empire strong enough to stand through a future of blood and fire."
The change in the room was subtle, but impossible for Astartes' senses to miss. Every warrior stood taller, straighter, their hands resting upon the hilts and handles of sheathed weapons.
"The Emperor believes us loyal. Our 4 legions were ordered here on that misguided conviction alone. But our coalition here and now is the fruit of decades' worth of planning. It was ordained and brought about according to ancient prophecy. No more hiding in the shadows, no more manipulating fleet movements and falsifying expeditionary data. From this day forward, the Alpha Legion, the Word Bearers, the Iron Warriors and the Night Lords stand together. Bloodied but unbowed, beneath the flag of War Master Horus, the second Emperor, the true Emperor."
The Astartes stared, none of them moving a muscle. The Primarch could have been addressing an army of statues.
"I see your eyes," Lorgar's smile took in the room, "even behind your helms. I see the hesitation, the unease, the mistrust of the very brothers by your side. We are not friends, are we? We have never been allies. Our legions are kin by bloodline, yet not brought together in proven chosen brotherhood. But remember this, as you look upon the shades of armor so different to your own, you are united by righteousness. You are unified in revenge. Every weapon in this room is wielded for the same cause, and that, my sons, brothers, and cousins, that is all the strength we need. After today, we will be brothers. The Forge of War will see to that.
Silence reigned in the wake of Lorgar's words. The Primarch turned back to the hololithic table, already entering the codes necessary to activate the image generator, when several muted clanks sounded behind him. Lorgar looked over his shoulder, seeking the sound sources. Several Wordbearer captains were shaking hands with their counterparts in the other legions, with more joining in every moment. They gripped wrist to wrist, a traditional warrior gesture to seal a pact. Argeltal offered his hand to Sevatar. The Night Lord gripped the Wordbearer's wrist as their emotionless faceplates met each other's eyes.
"Death to the false Emperor,"
said Sevatar, becoming the first living soul to utter the words that would echo through the millennia. The curse was taken up by other voices, and soon it was being cried in full-throated roars.
"Death to the false Emperor! Death to the false Emperor! Death! Death! Death!"
At the heart of the cheering, the four Primarchs smiled. Each curl to their lips was variously cold, ugly, mocking, or indulgent, but it was as close as they'd come to showing any emotion so far. Lorgar keyed in the last command code. The hololithic table rumbled into life, its internal generators cycling up to project a flickering image of the surface tundra. A grainy view, flawed by patches of static distortion, hovered in the air above the table. Helms of dark iron, midnight, sea green, crimson and grey, lifted to regard the hollow image. It showed a ravine, gouged with tectonic ambivalence, running for several kilometres through the landscape.
"The Urgal Depression,"
said one of Lorgar's brothers in a rumbling baritone.
"Our hunting ground."
Conrad Kurz had once, perhaps, been a majestic creature. Everything in his bearing spoke of a regal nature now shattered, all grace and grandeur cast aside, to leave a warrior prince skinned down to a core of lethal, cadaverous nobility. In black armour edged by unpolished bronze, the Primarch of the Night Lords gestured to the ravine with a power claw of four curving blades.
"Enhance the image."
Unseen servitors did exactly that. The three-dimensional hololith blurred momentarily before refocusing on a more detailed landscape. At one end of the ravine was a fortress of plasteel, ceramite and rockcrete, rendered indistinct by the haze of void shields protecting it from orbital bombardment. A massive panorama of bulwarks, barricades, trenches and earthworks stood implacable guard around it. Every warrior present could see it for what it was, a defensive masterpiece constructed to repel tens of thousands of enemy troops. At the other end of the canyon, a literal fleet of gunships and drop pods lay in wait, but it was what turned the canyon's center dark that drew all eyes in the chamber. Two armies were locked in pitched conflict, two greyish masses of grinding battle lines reduced to an amalgamated horde.
"Enhance central sector,"
ordered Primarch Kurz. The image blurred and refocused again, showing a flawed image disturbed by interference of
civil war.
Conrad Kurz smiled, all teeth and bright eyes.
"The two sides are matched with our brothers in the Death Guard. World Eaters, Sons of Horus and Emperor's Children, holding superior ground, and the Iron Hands, Salamanders and Raven Guard, maintaining numerical superiority."
Argeltal growled as he breathed, feeling his lips moistened by bile. Nearby heads turned to him, but he ignored their watchful eyes.
"Brother," Erebus voxed from his place at the Primarch's side.
"I thirst,"
Argeltal smiled as he spoke into the private channel.
"You thirst? I have tasted Astarte's blood, Erebus. It is rich enough to never fade from memory, and its genetic holiness stings the tongue. I will taste it again, on Istvan V.
The chaplain didn't reply, but Argeltal saw Erebus turn to Corfiren, and knew all too well that they were conversing over a secure channel. The thought made him smirk. Silly little creatures, so precious in their meagre ambitions, so feverishly hungry for temporal power. He felt a moment's pity for the Primarch to have spent the last 4 decades guided by their insipid scheming. That thought cooled his condescending wrath, though. What had they done in all this time?
Corferon's remark about Argeltal nursemaiding the custodies away from the true legion had bitten deeper than he wished to confess. The growl grew faint in his throat, taking on a bestial whine.
"Be silent," grunted Sevatar.
Argeltal tensed, holding his breath, suppressing the rush of anger he felt at being spoken to in such a way. Whatever was bonded to him, truly loathed being pushed into situations of submission.
"Raum."
"What?"
"I am Raum."
Argeltal felt his heart beat in time to the whispered syllables. The bile at his lips bubbled as it boiled, and his hands ached to the bone with merciless ferocity.
"You are the second soul my father saw so long ago."
"Yes."
"You twist my thoughts. I am forever on the edge of rage, or speaking bladed words to my brothers. I bring out only what is already present within you."
"I will not let you claim me."
"I will not try. We are one. I have slept long enough to drip into every cell within your body. It is your flesh, and it is my flesh. It will change soon. We are Argeltal, and we are Raum."
"Your voice is the same as mine."
"It is how my soul speaks to yours, and how our shared flesh translates it into mortal meaning. I have no voice, except for the roars we will shout when we shed blood."
Argeltal felt burning wetness around his gauntleted fingers.
"I am in pain. I cannot move my hands."
"Symbiosis. Union. Balance. There will be times when you rise to the fore. There will be times when I am in ascendance."
"Then what is this pain?"
"It is all a prelude for the changes to come."
"The gods have already sent their call. The ordained time has come. I am faster, stronger, more vital than before, and I cannot remove my armor nor take off my helm."
"Yes, this is your new skin."
"What more changes can there be?"
Raum laughed, whisper faint and teasingly distant.
"You will hear the gods many times in your life. The ordained time has not truly come. You heard the call to begin the long war, but the gods have not screamed yet. This is the prelude."
"But I heard them. We heard them."
"You will know the scream when you truly hear it. This, I promise."
"The Galvorbach will stand with the Iron Warriors forming the anvil," concluded Lorgar.
Argeltal refocused on his surroundings. The pain in his hands faded once more. Not knowing what he should say, he nodded his head in the Primarch's direction, agreeing with Lorgar's words without knowing what they were. The Primarch offered a kindly smile, seeming to sense his son's distraction. Lord Kurz turned his sleepless eyes upon his own Astartes.
"Then we stand ready. My first company will also join the Iron Warriors for the initial strike." "Dath Sethikara Tash Dasovalian."
The Nostraman language hissed off his tongue.
"Solrothis Vezajas."
The Night Lord captains banged dark gauntlets against their chest plates.
"In midnight clad,"
they chorused.
"Iron within."
Perturabo spoke gruffly and hefted his massive warhammer over his shoulder.
"Iron without."
In response, his men thudded the hafts of their axes and hammers on the decking. The warriors of the Alpha Legion and their Primarch himself remained silent. It fell to Lorgar, as Argeltal had known it would, to finish the gathering.
"The forces on the surface have been embattled for almost 3 hours, with no clear victor emerging. Even now the Loyalists wait for us to make planet fall, believing we will reinforce their final advance. We all know our parts to play in this performance. We are all aware of the blood we must shed to spare our species from destruction and install Horus as the master of mankind. Brothers, the Primarch bowed his head in reverence, today we take the first step towards forging a greater kingdom. May the gods go with you.
As Argal Tal made to move from the chamber, he saw his former mentor beckon him closer. Erebus was handsome only in the way a weapon could be called such, a cold blade, dangerous no matter who holds it, reflecting the light while producing none of its own. The Gal Vorbak leader stalked closer, ululating a quiet growl in his throat, nursing it there and enjoying the feel of his rage. Erebus wished to speak with him, and Corfirin would almost certainly remain. That in itself was cause for disquiet. What ambitions had they fed to the Primarch in four long decades? What had they seen, and what had they learned? His growl grew louder.
Hate him, but do not strike him. He is chosen, just like you. Will I always hear your voice? No. Our end is fated. We will be destroyed in the shadow of great wings. Then you will hear my voice no more.
Argal Tal felt his blood run cold and knew that this feeling, at least, was not part of the promised changes to his body.
Erebus, he greeted the first chaplain, I am in no mind to argue. Nor I, the older warrior said. Much has happened since we last spoke. We have both seen many things and made difficult choices to bring us to this moment in time.
Erebus met Argal Tal's eye lenses with his own stony, solemn gaze. It was hard not to admire the chaplain's composure at all times and his great patience. It was also hard to forget his great disappointment, once it was earned.
I have heard of all you witnessed and went through, Erebus continued. Zaphen has kept me appraised.
Do you have a point? Argal Tal murmured, and even to his own ears his words sounded puerile.
I am proud of you. Erebus briefly rested his hand on Argal Tal's shoulder. I simply wished to say that.
Without another word, Erebus moved away, following the Primarch. Corfirin gave a wet, burbling chuckle and stalked off in slower pursuit, Terminator joints grinding.